bona tarda. Benvinguts, benvingudes a aquesta nova edició dels Debats d'Educació. Tots els que sou aquí, que ens acompanyeu en aquest magnífic auditori que, que tenim pel suport continuat del MACBA, el que hem d'agrair una vegada més la seva col·laboració. I també benvinguts als que ens esteu seguint a través de video streaming, que sabem que també sou molts i molt actius també en aquests debats. Per tant, benvinguts tots. Debats d'educació, per molts de vosaltres ja tampoc no cal repetir-ho, però pels que us incorporéssiu avui, és una iniciativa de la Fundació Jaume Bofill i dels Estudis de Psicologia i Ciències de l'Educació de la Universitat Oberta de Catalunya. El principal objectiu de debats d'educació és oferir això, un espai per al debat entorn de l'àmbit educatiu, obert a la participació de la ciutadania en general i també, més específicament, de la comunitat educativa, entesa també en el seu sentit més ample. És un espai dirigit també als actors socioeconòmics, polítics i de la cultura del nostre país, que busca la seva sensibilització davant els temes que són vigents, els temes d'actualitat en l'àmbit educatiu, però que també pretén contribuir a identificar aquelles qüestions que no són tan transitòries, que són qüestions de fons i que són aquelles que ens han de permetre avançar cap a l'educació que albirem en el futur. Amb aquesta intenció, Debats d'Educació incorpora persones expertes del nostre context immediat, però també, i de fet, si veieu el nostre corregut, de fet hem de dir que principalment, aquests debats pretenen també aportar el contrast que ens poden oferir altres òptiques i experiències que podem identificar en el context internacional. Aquesta, novament, va ser la intenció de la darrera edició dels debats, que la vam fer, de fet, fa molt poquetes setmanes, a meitats del mes de setembre, en aquest cas per apropar-nos, des de la perspectiva de Charles Leadbetter, al concepte d'aprenentatge dinàmic i específicament a la potencialitat d'un aprenentatge orientat a la resolució de problemes. Per reprendre aquesta qüestió a partir d'aquest recent debat i per obrir-la a la reflexió d'altres experts i encara més, si és possible, a la participació general, aquest proper dimarts, dia 11 d'octubre, de 6 a 7, us convidem a un nou seminari web que sabeu que fem, que generem també a partir d'aquests debats, com amb el que fem avui, que també el tindrem, i en aquest cas per posar el focus, tal com us deia, en l'aprenentatge de la resolució de problemes i en la seva potencialitat en termes educatius. De fet, la invitació que us fem a intervenir en aquests seminaris web i la importància que donem a la participació i la col·laboració en la resolució de reptes educatius ens permet enllaçar amb la qüestió que volem abordar en el debat d'avui, que de fet pretén oferir-vos una nova visió sobre el desenvolupament professional en l'àmbit de l'educació. Ho farem a partir de l'aproximació a una experiència d'aprenentatge participatiu impulsada pels propis educadors. Es tracta del moviment EdCam i ens hi aproparem de la mà de la nostra ponent d'avui, fundadora i membre d'aquest moviment. Abans de donar la paraula a la Kristen Swanson, l'Ismael Palacín, el director de la Fundació Jaume Bofill, us la presentarà.
Moltes gràcies. Sí, moltes gràcies, Josep Maria. Moltes gràcies a tots i totes els que heu vingut avui i gràcies als que ens acompanyeu online i per streaming. Us animem, els que no esteu aquí, doncs, com sabeu, a tuitejar, com sempre, amb el hashtag Debats d'Educació i totes aquelles preguntes, aportacions, links i tot el que, diguem, com a intel·ligència col·lectiva puguem aportar al llarg del debat, us asseguro que les aprofitarem, les preguntes en el torn final de debats, i les altres coses les analitzem després i ens serveixen per preparar i entendre millor els propers materials. Bé, Edcamp, us ho explicarà millor la Kristen, però va d'aprenentatge radical, d'aprenentatge entre iguals, aprenentatge viral. De fet, més que un programa, més que una activitat, més que una iniciativa, es pot qualificar d'un moviment. És un moviment jove, em sembla que fa 6 anys, i em sembla que amb més de 1.000 Edcamps fins a dia d'avui, la majoria als Estats Units, però també en molts altres països. És una experiència difícil d'explicar, que s'ha de segurament viure més que no pas escoltar. Però avui tenim aquí, tenim el luxe de tenir aquí la presidenta de la Edcamp Foundation, una de les fundadores i la presidenta del paraigües, diguem, de la institució que agrupa tot aquest moviment, que vetlla pels seus valors, per la seva ètica, per la seva genuïtat i que no perdi, i per la seva perfecció també, no? Per anar generant i capitalitzant aprenentatges. I ella us podrà transmetre des de la pròpia vivència, des de l'esperit, des de la convicció, els principis d'aquest moviment, també els seus trucs, però en definitiva estem parlant no tant d'una tecnologia, que sí, que té la seva tècnica i els seus manuals, com d'una ètica, una manera d'entendre una actitud front a l'aprenentatge i front als companys de la mateixa professió, front als docents. He de destacar que des del moment en què fa, crec que un any i mig, no? Vam conèixer aquesta realitat, i algunes persones de la Fundació, com el Banc d'Ensir, van anar als Estats Units a conèixer-la en directe. Vam tenir una acollida absolutament franca, oberta, generosa, és a dir, d'una coherència enorme amb el que és l'ètica i els principis d'aquest moviment. De seguida ens vam trobar amb una gent i una fundació entusiasmats de compartir el seu coneixement, diguem, absolutament oberts i generosos a l'hora de portar tot el que poguessin aportar, i encantats de que tot allò que han après, tot allò que han creat, es pogués també estendre doncs a Catalunya i en el sud. I en el sud d'Europa. I això ho hem de destacar, perquè això no és l'habitual en el nostre món, que les relacions siguin tan fàcils, tan franques, tan obertes, i per això especialment agraïm que la Kristen especialment hagi vingut fins aquí a explicar-nos-ho, perquè la veu original dels que ho han viscut és enormement poderosa. Aquest model, per això hem de dir que és un model, diria que culturalment estrany, pel que són les costums de com gestionem la formació aquí, o de la típica manera com gestionem la formació d'allò que en diem, o s'ha dit moltes vegades, individualisme docent, no? o aquell formalisme burocràtic en què a vegades doncs tots hem promogut en forma d'experts, de conferències, no? I de totes les formalitats que a vegades potencien però també poden constrenyir molts nivells molt determinants d'aprenentatge. Però he de dir que a Catalunya ja tenim experiències pioneres. En tenim una en concret, és el Betacamp. Molts de vosaltres l'haureu seguit, el podeu trobar fàcilment per internet o especialment per Twitter. Hi ha 2 edicions en què l'estiu un grup de persones que, a més, no coneixien l'experiència de la Fundació Edcamp, van reunir metodologies, no? Que havien trobat en altres camps, les van aplicar en el camp de l'educació i han autopropulsat unes trobades extraordinàriament genuïnes, amb una actitud energètica, podem dir, creativa, i amb una capacitat d'aprenentatge molt gran. Algunes d'aquestes persones, bé, ells ens han inspirat i ens han incrementat encara molt més la credibilitat de que aquí val la pena, de que aquí és possible, i el saber i la vivència d'algunes d'aquestes persones doncs també està en aquest projecte, no? Diguem, també ens aprofitem d'aquesta experiència única, diguem, per animar-vos a molts de vosaltres. Per tant, el que anem a presentar d'alguna manera és un tret de sortida de, diguem, del que n'aprendrem, però bàsicament que volem que sigui un pas a l'acció. En concret, el dia 18 a l'escola, el dia 18 d'octubre, a l'escola dels Encants, a les 6 de la tarda, hem convocat una mena de Edcamp Mare, una experiència d'Edcamp genuïna, en el que de passada presentarem i farem que els participants visquin com és un EdCamp, presentarem alguns toolkits, algunes eines que s'han desenvolupat, algunes guies basades en productes que durant anys ha fet la Fundació EdCamp i tota la seva àrea d'influència. Presentarem alguns vídeos, alguns materials per explicar, intentar explicar fàcilment quina és l'actitud i quina és la manera i quins són els passos i la metodologia com es fa, i per animar els participants a que siguin la llavor de futurs EdCamps, que siguin els líders o el grup motor d'altres EdCamps, perquè aquests altres EdCamps només els muntarà grups de docents que sentin que aquesta és la seva missió, que s'ho creuen, que volen la necessitat, és a dir, ningú muntarà EdCamps per altres, n'existiran si hi ha gent que creu que allò realment li serà útil per ell i ho propulsarà. I per això sí que, diguem, ja només amb el boca-orella previ en el projecte, doncs ja hi ha 5 EdCamps durant els dos propers mesos. Una a Mataró, planificats, una a Girona, una a Montcada, una a Tordera i una a Barcelona, relacionat amb un àmbit temàtic de ciències, i dos o tres més que estan a punt de... És a dir, pensem que realment si només amb el boca-orella dels sospitosos habituals, no, hi ha tanta gent s'ha animat a cegues a tirar endavant... Això té possibilitats de que ho convertim en alguna cosa útil. De tota manera, la responsabilitat de que un EdCamp funcioni és dels que hi són. I això és una cosa que jo no us podré explicar pas ni de lluny també com la nostra ponent d'avui. Us la presento molt breument. La Kristen Swanson és llicenciada per la Universitat de Sales, té dos màsters a la Universitat de Wilkes i un doctorat en educació per la de Widener. Actualment viu a San Francisco, és membre fundadora, com us deia, del moviment EdCamp i actual membre de la Junta de la Fundació. És també professora associada a la mateixa universitat i directora d'aprenentatge a Slack, que pels que ho coneixereu és una aplicació molt coneguda de missatgeria. Ha exercit docència primària, ha estat assessora regional per la Response to Intervention, va treballar com a directora de tecnologia de l'educació per un districte escolar públic a Pennsilvània i va desenvolupar plans d'estudi amb el doctor Grant Wiggins, Understanding by Design. També ha estat responsable d'aprenentatge a Bright Bytes, que és una plataforma online de recerca per analitzar accions que milloren l'aprenentatge i abasta més de 10 milions d'estudiants a tot el món. És autora, és blocaire, una apassionada de compartir el missatge de l'aprenentatge orgànic i ha estat convidada en moltes conferències. Si la voleu seguir a través del seu blog, podeu, però també podeu seguir algunes de les seves publicacions. Destacaríem una que es diu Professional Learning in the Digital Age, una altra que es diu Teaching the Common Core Speaking and Listening Standards, Estratègies and Digital Tools, o Unleashing Student Superpowers, Practical Teaching Strategies for 21st Century Students. Aquesta informació la podeu trobar, com sempre, en el web de debats, i a partir d'aquí us animo a seguir-la. I comencem a seguir-la, com no, avui que ha vingut aquí. Gràcies, Kristen.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. All right, there we go. Thank you so much for having me to your beautiful city. I come from California in San Francisco, and I haven't seen rain in 10 months. So it was such a treat to have a rainy day today. So thank you. I heard that you probably didn't enjoy it as much as I did, but it was absolutely wonderful. So I'm coming to you this evening to share with you a little bit about my journey. Not my journey as a researcher, not my journey as someone who cares deeply about technology, not my journey as a wife or a sister or any of that, but I'm coming to you to share with you my most important journey, and that is my journey as a teacher. So these are a few of my students that have learned alongside me, and I mean that truly because every day they teach me something different, for the better part of the last decade. And sometimes my students look like this, and sometimes my students look like grown-ups, and sometimes my students are the engineers at the technology company where I work. And they are by far my most difficult class. So what I would ask of you is, how many teachers are here? How many people are teachers? Thank you. I know you put in a really hard day at school today, and I know how tired you all are, so thank you for taking the time to come out this evening. How many folks are administrators or principals? folks who work in schools or run schools, a couple folks, and then maybe other people who just wandered in here by accident, right? Yeah. to get out of the rain, perhaps. So what I'm really here to do today is to share with you what my students taught me about learning and then how I used that to create an environment that I think has been really transformative to my development as an educator. And all of this starts with sort of this fundamental understanding that learning is very, very social, especially for adults. That when we are learning, we learn best when we're learning with other people, and we learn best when we decide and we choose what it is that we want to learn. And so to kick us off this evening, I wanted to start with not an answer, but a question. I wanted to start with the simple question of, what was your best learning experience this year? And I want you to think about that for a moment. It may have been in school, it may have been at a professional development session, but it may not have been. And when I think about my three best learning experiences this year, I actually think of things that feel very different from traditional school. So I think about the time that I met someone in the library and they taught me how to use a new computer program that really helped me organize my calendar better. And I thought about the time that my husband convinced me to go ziplining. And I thought about the time that my neighbor finally taught me how to get those roses to bloom. And when I think about all of those learning experiences, they come down to two things. They were with people I trusted, and they were things that I chose that I wanted to learn. And that is really what social learning is all about. Something that you choose to learn with someone that you trust because they have experiences that they value. These people may not be the premier expert in the field. My neighbor is not the premier expert on growing roses. However, I trusted him. His rose bushes looked much better than mine. And it was something that he helped me get just a little bit better. So what we're here to talk about today is learning not necessarily from experts, but instead sharing expertise, and that we all have expertise to share. It doesn't mean that experts don't have a place, and we'll talk about that because I think that's very, very important. But I think that also the more we can come together as a community of learners, as adults, we will find there to be a revolution in how we feel about our students, how we feel about our classrooms, and how we feel as educators about learning. Because professional learning should be just as social as all the learning that happens in our daily lives. So when I tackle all of these problems that face me in my life, and when I use these social learning techniques, these are the same techniques that I can use to tackle what can happen in school and what can make my classroom instruction better. But the thing that I found to be a big hurdle is that it actually looks very different, right? When we go to professional learning, when we go to learning about our classrooms and about our schools, it often looks like this. It's something that usually we are told to go to. In my case, usually my principal or my the head of my school will say, we have a professional learning session on this day, and you're going to come, and you're going to sit in the fourth row, and you're going to listen. And these habits that we have can be sort of hard to break when it comes to learning. That sometimes when we want to learn something, we expect to come in and sit down and for the person up on the stage to have the answer. But I don't have the answer. All I have are the questions. Because I think that the more we come together and the more we start asking these questions together, the more likely we are to find the answers. Because you all have experiences that I don't have. You know things that I don't know. And together, we are much stronger than we are alone. And so there's an expert in this field. His name is Malcolm Knowles. And he talks about andragogy. And andragogy is really about adult learning and how adults learn best. And the two main parts of that are both responsibility and relationships, and then being self-directed. So this quote here talks about developing the ability to take increasing responsibility for our lives to become increasingly self-directed. And so about 7 years ago, when I started on this journey, I was doing a lot of work with some of Malcolm Knowles' understandings and some of his research. And the more I learned about this gentleman, the more frustrated I became that every time I had a professional development, it looked like that. And I started to think, how could I do this differently? How could I change? And I was in my classroom, and I will be honest with you, I felt very isolated. I felt like when I would shut that door, I would love being with the kids, but after the kids left, it was just me alone in the room trying to figure out what in the world was I going to do tomorrow to help these kids learn as much as they could in the short time that I had with them. And as I started to really think about that, a friend of mine, in a casual offhand comment, made a suggestion that at the time seemed incredibly crazy. They said, if you want some new teaching ideas, why don't you check out Twitter? And I said, Twitter? Isn't that where people go to explain what they had for breakfast? Isn't that where people go to post silly cat pictures? Why would I go on Twitter? And my friend said, there are teachers on Twitter, and you have to know how to follow the hashtags to find these teachers. So at the time, in 2009, there was one Twitter chat. So you can see on this map now, there are dozens in all of the states in the United States. But at the time, in 2009, there was one. And it was just called EdChat. That was the only one there was. And it was on Tuesdays at noon. So Tuesdays, I would grab my lunch out of my lunch bag, and I would hurry back to my classroom while the kids were at recess. And I would go online, and I would follow EdChat at noon for 1 hour. And teachers would just talk about different tools and links and ideas. And I thought, man, this is kind of neat. And not only that, all of these people are trying out these ideas in their classroom. At the same time, I'm trying them out in mine. And so we had this idea around hatching baby chicks. So we got some baby chicks, we hatched the baby chicks, and the baby chicks had a Twitter account. And every day, the baby chicks would tweet, and we would post photos of the baby chicks doing all kinds of things at night from the Twitter account. And it became a little bit of a sensation. So I'm going to share a short video clip here that kind of shows you in the very early days of how I was thinking about learning with Twitter and with social learning and with EdCams and sort of with some of these tools.
The youngest members of Katie Zorzi's kindergarten class at Poff Elementary School in Quakertown are not her students. They are these days-old baby chicks.
You better not jump, little one.
They're also the most popular members of the class.
I like petting them. Molly's mine, and she's very cute. When we hold them, they don't sit down, they stand up, but the claws kind of hurt. They, like, tickle you a lot, feel fuzzy.
They're just basically learning about the life cycle of a chick.
Don't be scared, Molly.
These chicks aren't just teaching the kids about science.
Heather, where were they?
They escaped.
The undisciplined creatures are actually multidisciplinary.
And then they're writing just about them, what they're learning.
So we want to write, the baby chicks are starting to grow feathers.
The students use phonics and a program called Kid Writing to put their thoughts on a smart board.
The baby chicks are growing feathers.
But that's not all. These youngsters are also learning about the web from their web-footed friends.
Well, I actually got this idea through my Twitter account.
Poff's instructional specialist, Kristen Swanson, hooked the kids up to an online site.
They feel like they are contributors to a worldwide community. They aren't afraid to press buttons or do this or do that. They just want to explore.
It's awesome. Like, every morning we go on, we check the wiki, and we see what parents have posted.
We're playing with them, writing about them. We're making pictures of them.
There's only one downside.
I wish I could take a baby chick home.
She can't take the baby chicks home, but at least they are driving home lessons for life.
The chicks are cute, and I just like them.
So that was a long time ago, and you can even tell when you look at some of the websites how primitive they were. But that was kind of what started me on my journey, to see how excited the kids got when it wasn't just me and Miss Zorzi who were looking at their writing. Instead, it was the whole world. And I started to think, wow, maybe there are some other things that I can start to learn, and there are some other people that I can start to connect to that will take me even further. And this gentleman, Kevin, sent me a tweet a week after he saw the video that I just shared with you, and he said, you know, you seem like someone that might like this event we have called a bar camp. Why don't you come along? It's free. And I thought, well, it's free. Sounds kind of interesting. Sounds kind of fun. Sure, I'll give it a try. And at the time, I was living in Philadelphia, and it was just a few miles from my home. And when I showed up, this was what I saw, and it looked like complete chaos. Now, in the past, when I had been to education conferences, people would dress very formally. They would come in, and everything would be kind of quiet and organized. There might be some light music playing. And this was pretty much like a mosh pit. There were people all over the place talking to each other and laughing, and everyone was dressed very casually. And they were all gathered around this giant board. And what I noticed was the board was full of questions and ideas. Because the idea of this particular event wasn't that people were coming to learn the answers, but instead people were coming to ask the questions and figure out possible things that might be answers together. And so you can see people started building the session board for the actual conference, the day of the event. And as someone who is very organized and really enjoys like everything to sort of have their own place, this felt really scary to me. I couldn't believe that they were just going to have a conference based on post-it notes that they had come up with that morning. But as we went through the day, it really worked. And it was really exciting to see how all of these questions turned into ideas and answers and resources that I hadn't thought of or hadn't known about before. And the one thing that struck me most was a comment that one of the gentlemen in one of the sessions made, which was, the world is moving so fast that if I put in a conference proposal 6 months ago for this session, this particular technology didn't even exist yet. And so the idea was this could be very responsive to what was happening in these different fields at this particular time. And so I started to really get in touch with the idea that to offer value, you really just had to have expertise and good questions. You didn't necessarily have to be the leading expert in the field. Now, we were drawing on a lot of that research. We were drawing on a lot of those experts. But some of them may or may not have been in the room. But instead, because we could all share what we knew and we could all share what we learned and we could all say, have you seen this resource and have you seen this resource, it became a community of learners. It became a place where everyone had something very valuable to offer, and it was so energizing. It made me feel like I had 1,000 new friends to help me on my learning journey. And as someone who was previously very isolated and felt that when I closed the door to my classroom, I was left there alone, this was a completely different feeling. And so I worked with 5 of my friends and said, hey, this was a great conference. Why don't we do this just for teachers? Because the first one was just a general one where anyone could come. We had people from all different fields coming. And we thought, let's make one especially for teachers because teaching is really hard and there's a lot to talk about. And the people who know the most about what works with kids are the people in the classroom with kids, the people who are there every day working and figuring this out and testing and sharing with each other. And so we came up with 5 rules of the road for this. And these are sort of the 4 tenets of EdCamp, the things that we decided to try when we ran that very first EdCamp. The first was that we just wanted it to be free. We just said, you know what, we'll get a school, we'll get a place to donate some space to us, and we'll just have it be free. We don't have any way to accept money. We're not going to worry about it. The main reason we made it free was because we thought it would just sort of be a hassle. So we said, free. We said open to everyone. We wanted it to be for teachers, but if a parent wanted to come and learn, we let them in. Or if a board member wanted to come in and check out what we were talking about, we said, yep, come on in, because you have important experiences and perspectives too. The third was, it was vendor free. We had no one there who was trying to sell anything. A lot of times in the United States, when you go to a conference, you go into a session and someone's actually trying to sell you something instead of share what you have learned or what they have learned. And so we said, no one who's trying to sell anything. We just really want people who care about the kids. The fourth rule is probably the strangest one, and it feels the strangest. And that is that anyone who comes that day can offer a session. Because the idea is not that they are presentations with slides. The idea is that you ask a question to the group, and then you have an interactive conversation about that question. Some of the best EdCamp sessions I've ever been to were ones where I didn't know anything about that particular topic, and people came together and helped me and pointed me to the right resources so I could learn. And so the idea that anyone can get up and share really changes the way that the environment feels, because everyone is responsible for their own learning at an EdCamp. I always tell people, the only person to blame for a bad day at EdCamp is yourself, because if you're having a really bad day, it's okay, you can just go. And I think that that's really important, that if it's not working for you, like, that's okay. It's something that I call, it's one item on the buffet of professional development, and there are lots of items that we should be choosing, and this is just one of them, and it's certainly not for everyone. And then the last, and this is really important, is the rule of 2 feet. So I am a teacher, and this rule is probably the hardest for me, because I've been taught my entire life that you don't ever get up and leave a session unless you are incredibly offended by what is happening, or something is on fire, or something else terrible is happening. But what the rule of 2 feet really says is that what you need to do is you need to go where you grow. You need to be in a session that's working for you. And if you're not in a session that's working for you, try another session. Sometimes I've been in sessions that weren't really covering things that I needed, and I ended up going out into the hallway, finding someone, sitting down with them in the hallway, and having a really relevant, really powerful conversation. And that's what the rule of 2 feet is all about, giving you as the learner the right to be a little bit selfish. Very rarely as teachers do we get to be selfish, and if you are coming out for a day of learning, you should be a little bit selfish and learn the things that you really need to learn so that you can have that impact on kids that you want to have. And these were the first 5 rules of EdCamp, and they were very loose. They were very loose when we first put them together. We had the very first EdCamp in May of 2010, so not too long after I had found Twitter. We had no budget, and so to get people out, we used sidewalk chalk all over the town, and we drew these every day, and we would tell people all of the information, and that was how we got people to know about our event. The space that we had for our event was a building that was set to be knocked down 3 days after the event, and they told us security stops showing up 7 days before they knock it down. No one will ever know that you're in there. So we had a very, very small budget. We advertised on Twitter. We advertised on websites. We called into radio stations and asked them to share this information. It was very much a ragtag group of folks. And to be honest, on that very first morning, we were looking at this blank schedule board, and we had no idea if anyone was going to come. It was really, really scary. And we sat, and we waited, and we waited, and we couldn't believe it, but people came. And they filled up this entire schedule board. Now, you can definitely tell that I'm an elementary teacher because it's laminated and it has sticky notes on it. But you can see that this board went from being blank to being filled with the questions and ideas of 100 educators who showed up on a Saturday to spend their time and to spend their energy answering questions to help their kids. And that was the most powerful moment of my life, aside from getting married. And I have to say that because my husband is in the back. So a picture is worth a thousand words. This is what that day looked like. This is what that day looked like. You can see we had panels, and it was messy, and we had people sitting next to each other with laptops, and people sitting and sort of doing their own thing. I mean, people organized in lots of different ways that day. The learning didn't look like learning usually looks when it comes to professional development. And if a picture is worth a thousand words, a movie is probably worth a million. So I'm going to show you a few video clips from that very first Ed Camp in May of 2009.
Ed Camp is comfortable. It's motivating.
That is really cool.
What does it mean in today's landscape to do good research?
Ed Camp is organic, participant-driven professional development. There are no keynotes, there's no set schedule, and the participants set the agenda.
How many of you are teacher educators?
The purpose of the workshops today are to put a bunch of really smart people together in a room and share ideas and talk. Really what we're trying to do at events like this are amplify each other's ideas and really leverage those to help improve what we do, and that's teach kids.
These are Drupal blogs, so it links to 8th grade work in 2009-2010.
We're seeing a wide range of educators coming from all of these different schools within the city, counties surrounding Philadelphia, and it's leading to some really rich conversations around what's going on and where are we going in education.
How can you play with this stuff in a way that kids are going to get something out of it?
I love how much technology is integrated into it. We're on Twitter, and you can just go and you can see what's going on not only in your own workshop, but what's going on in all the other workshops at the same time.
You can see it in their faces. Everybody wants to raise their hand and talk because they have so many ideas to contribute.
I think the thing to keep in mind first is this is a conversation. We don't mean this to be a lecture.
I see a commitment from the educators here at this conference to engage and make this a really positive experience.
I'm really here to learn from everybody. That's why I came today.
Ed Camp is an effective professional development. I can take what I've learned today back to my school and use similar ideas in our own professional development.
Our hope is that school districts across the nation will adopt the Ed Camp model for professional development.
Ed Camp has provided opportunity for people to think and talk about their educational philosophy, attend something for nothing, and come away with great ideas. I think that's really important.
So those are some videos and images from the very first Ed Camp. Let that finish. There we go.
This has been a True Life Media production.
Okay, so those are some videos from that very, very first Ed Camp that we later edited and added a bunch of sound to hopefully make it sound a little bit fancier. And after that very first Ed Camp, something happened that I didn't really expect to happen. So that night, after the Ed Camp was finished and we were all exhausted, we wrote a blog post. And we said, hey, we tried this thing. We put up a blank schedule board. We invited lots of educators. We asked a bunch of questions. And we had a really great day. We figured out the sessions on the morning of the day. We ran those sessions as conversations where everyone interacted and tried to answer the question as best they could. We took some notes. And here you go, world. This is what we learned. And I'll be honest, I didn't really expect anything to happen. And something started to happen. So that very first year, we had 8 Ed Camps, and we were stunned because we didn't think anybody else would actually think this was a good idea. But people started calling me and saying, hey, we want to have an Ed Camp in New York. Do we have to have permission to do that? And I said, you want to have an Ed Camp in New York? That's so cool. You don't have to ask for permission. Just go. And it started to take off. And we put up a blog post that said, you don't need permission, just go run an Ed Camp. And we actually ran what we called the Blank Schedule Board Challenge, where we actually encouraged people in their faculty meetings to put up a blank schedule board. And instead of going through all the updates for their normal faculty meeting, can you ask questions and have people just group up around the questions they want to answer and talk? And so after that first year, when we had 8, the next year, we had a couple more, and we even had one in Finland, and we were pretty pumped about that. And then the next year, there were even more, and then more, and then more, and then more, and now I've lost count. We have probably 6 or 7 ed camps every Saturday in the United States across the country. And the main way that I know that they're going on is because I follow the hashtag on Twitter. So if you're interested and you're curious, what is it that people are talking about when they're at an ed camp, check out the hashtag edcamp, or check out the hashtag edcampphilly, or check out the hashtag edcampnyc, and you'll be able to see very quickly what kinds of conversations and what kinds of questions we're asking. But the important thing I would say is that the questions we're asking might not be the questions that you have. You might have different challenges. You might have different ideas to explore. And that's okay. That's what makes this model so powerful. It's that it's customized and tailored to you. And so after we had all of these ed camps and after they started happening, I started to think, well, how could we bring these people together? Because many of these ed camps were happening just on their own, and I didn't really know everyone who was running an ed camp. And so we started to bring together this group called the Ed Camp Foundation. And the purpose of the Ed Camp Foundation is just to help ed campers meet other ed campers. And so sometimes we'll have meetups where we bring together ed campers from different parts of the world or different countries. And sometimes we have video chats and we do all different sorts of events just to bring educators together, because there is no worse feeling than being an educator and closing that door and being alone. And we want to make sure that if there is an educator out there that needs that support, that there is some support there for them. Oops, there's even more. Yeah, there's a lot. And the reason that this has worked is because ed camps actually have an impact on kids. I know that there are a lot of different ways to improve your instruction. Absolutely, there are. But for me, when I talk with another educator who is tackling the same problems that I am, that's when I get the best ideas. That's when I get the insight. That's when I get the most excited. And so for me, we've seen a tremendous impact on students whose teachers are ed campers. And we're starting to study this, and we're starting to go through experiments where we start to see what is the impact that this has. And it's very, very early. And to be frank with you, there's more data that exists than we even know where it exists yet. So we're trying to sort of bring all of that together. But one of the most marked things that we noticed were that there were students who saw their teachers going to ed camp, and they asked to come along. They said, we heard about this ed camp thing. We heard that you think it's pretty cool. Can we come? And so the students went to the ed camp and said, well, we're going to do this, but we're going to call it Stew Camp. And so they started Stew Camp because they said, you know, we're the kids. If we want to make school better, we want to get in on this too. And so now, in addition to Ed Camp, we have Stew Camps where kids come together and they talk about what they want to see in the classroom. And this idea of student voice and student choice has really ignited a lot of schools where we're starting to see Stew Camp take off. And one of the most interesting things that we've seen, specifically in the state of Iowa, is that when students in Iowa run a Stew Camp, they not only run the Stew Camp, but they run the Ed Camp for the teachers. And so it's part of they are the ones who bring together the invitations and manage the operations and actually run the event. And we get the best turnout there because people really want to come and participate in this conversation with their kids. And the communities come out, and they do a lot of interesting things. So they often have sessions on makerspaces, and you can see them building, and you can see them talking and sharing about what they want school to look like. Because their voice is really, really important when we start to think about this change. So I'm hopeful that after hearing a little bit about ed camps and hearing that you get to come in to a blank schedule board, offer up any idea, any question, or any topic, and talk through those topics interactively with folks, that perhaps you too will want to give this a try. And so on October 18th, we're having the very first ed camp here in Barcelona. I think it will be the very first ed camp in all of Spain. We have not had one in England yet, so this is definitely the first one sort of even in this region. And I couldn't be more excited about it. And so spread the word. I would love to have you come out and get your insight on how you are doing learning, how you are doing teaching, how you are interacting with your kids, and also how we can make this crazy thing called EdCamp better. Because everyone always has ideas. What if we tried this or what if we did that? That continue to make the model more robust. Because this is something that you can bring to your schools, you can bring it to your faculty meetings. It's really a great way to get involved. So why did this idea that was really just one crazy person, a.k.a. me, that was just one person's idea, why did it turn into hundreds of events? Well, I don't really know. But I have three guesses. The first is that we got really lucky. So when I had this idea, and when I wrote that blog post, it was May of 2010, which was the same year that Twitter blew up. And so teachers who previously didn't know how to find each other started finding each other. Teachers that didn't know how to connect to other people who were interested in the same topics that they were, all of a sudden had this new medium. And that was probably one of the biggest factors as to why this one person with one idea to make one event turned into this international network of educators doing amazing things. The second reason, I think, is because there was something going on in the United States at that time, a specific policy, you may be familiar with it, called No Child Left Behind. And under this particular policy, if you were a teacher, as I was, you were under some pretty strict guidelines. And it didn't really feel like you had a lot of choices as an educator at that time. And all we wanted was to make our own choices about what was important for learning for our kids because we knew them best and we spent every day with them. And so there was a strong need in our country at that time, specifically around moving towards innovation, moving towards new problems, and helping other people to see that we could be in control of our own learning and that we could be in control of our own destiny as educators and that we had a voice, we had a choice, and we had a say. And the third piece was that we trusted each other. We had built these relationships in these networks, and I trusted that if someone said to me, I've tried this in my classroom and it works, that it was something that was going to have a positive impact on my kids. Because around that time, I was also getting more and more technology into my classroom. And there was some research on what to do with that technology, but most of the time we were figuring it out. I remember opening up the first Chromebook and being like, I don't even know how to use this thing, and there is no best practice research yet on how to use this thing with kids, so I'm going to just try and figure it out the best I can. And I think we've come a long way since then, but I think there are still so many new technological innovations in our classrooms where we have a lot to learn, and the research is keeping up, but a lot of it we still have to improvise and sort of make it as we go, if you will. So a couple of things. I shared with you a little bit about how we are social learners as humans and how we need to have agency over our learning for it to be really effective. And for me, my journey took me through Twitter to EdCamp, which now has brought me to all of you. But whether you choose to engage in EdCamps or not, there are a couple of tips that I have for you just around social learning and how to take your professional development and sort of bump it up to the next level. So the first is, don't be embarrassed to share. I used to be really embarrassed as a teacher to say, I know this, I'm good at this, because I always thought, well, there must be someone out there who's better than me. There must be someone out there who knows more than I do. But I didn't realize that I was passing up a tremendous opportunity to share my expertise and to make my expertise greater by getting feedback from others and getting information about how I could shape my learning. So it's very common to be embarrassed, but don't be embarrassed. You always know more than you think you do. The second one is focus on the environment, not specifically the content of the professional development. So make sure that the content is flexible because you might get people in the room that want to sort of explore different avenues. And the more opportunities you can give people to explore by creating that open environment, the better it will be. Make it safe to ask questions. The content is critically important. The research is critically important. But if the environment is more open, everyone will receive that information better. The third is embrace experiments. If you try something and it doesn't work, that's just the first attempt in learning, right? So some people say, oh, well, that didn't work. It must not work. But instead say, that didn't work. What's one thing we could change and try it again and run a new experiment? So really think about this with an experimental mindset and just make small changes. Maybe you're not going to turn your faculty meeting into an ed camp, but maybe you will just have people come up with as many questions as they can for the last 10 minutes and take some time to answer them. You can start very, very small with social learning. The next thing is find your tribe. If you feel isolated in your classroom, there are so many places where you can go to find people who are interested in the same things that you are, whether it be Twitter, whether it be ed camps, whether it be just the networks that this foundation is bringing together. Find people, and honestly, you've probably found many of those people because that's why you're here. That's why you're interested. That's why you came out after a really long day in the classroom to spend time learning these kinds of things. And the last thing I would say is share widely. So you never know what idea you share that might touch someone else. So I had no idea a year ago when I was at EdCamp SF Bay in San Francisco, sharing in a session on makerspaces, that Val was going to walk in and say, hey, I want to have an EdCamp in Barcelona, and can you come and can we have an EdCamp? I had no idea that was going to happen. And after I met Val, he said, oh, well, I know this person and this person and this person, and I had known them too. And it was all because we were sharing widely and because we were saying that all of us are more important than any one of us when it comes to making learning better for kids. And so I recognize that this is just one small piece of a much larger puzzle. Social learning is one small piece of school change. It's one small piece of innovation. And there needs to be a lot of other things that go into this puzzle to complete it. There needs to be strong support from our government, strong support from our researchers, strong support from our communities, strong support from our parents. I think that this is a journey that we have only just started, but boy, am I glad that I have other people now on my journey instead of it just being my journey alone. And so thank you for taking the time to join me on this journey. I hope that I'll get to meet some of you, and I hope that all of you have found just a little bit of value, hopefully, in hearing from me, and it resonates with some of you in the journey that you are on. And so I'm very grateful to spend this time with you. I know that it's important time. It's time that you could be with your families or your children, and you have chosen instead to spend it with me, and that is quite an honor. So if you have any questions or you want to think about these things differently, or you just want to find out more, or you just want to pose a question to me that maybe I hadn't considered, please do. I hope that this is just the beginning and not the end. So if you want to find out more, you can connect with the EdCamp Foundation at edcamp.org, or if you just want to like reach out to me and check out some of my stuff, please feel free to do so. I have never gotten a tweet that I didn't like. So I am always learning and always sharing, and I hope to do that with all of you. So thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.